three humors recognized in Ayurveda. She suggested Panchakarma, a detoxification regimen consisting of restricted diet, oil massages, steam baths, and herbal treatments. That November, I went to the Ayurvedic clinic in Fairfield, Iowa, for Panchakarma, and also learned transcendental meditation. After 1 week, I was walking at least 2 miles a day, sleeping much better, and feeling better than I had in 10 years. My husband and friends told me I looked 2 to 3 years younger than before I went. I was started on some Ayurvedic herbs, the main one being ashwagandha. I changed my diet to mostly vegetarian with some fish and practiced yoga regularly. From November 1993 through February 1995, I went back to the Fairfield Clinic 4 more times, each time feeling better and better. I took a physician's training course in Ayurveda, as much for my own health as anything. I was able to open a family practice clinic in Ouray and start up an integrative practice. In November 1995, I found a chiropractor in Boulder, John Duyard, who had opened an Ayurvedic clinic closer to home. He practices a traditional form of Ayurveda, which I find superior to the form I learned. Under his supervision, I continue to take ashwagandha every day and continue to feel quite well. I walk at least 2 miles a day, cross-country ski up to 10 miles at a time with minimal fatigue, and I have no hint of depression. I no longer practice transcendental meditation. Instead, I use a combination of mindfulness meditation, breathing exercises, and contemplative prayer. I also recently learned some Qigong, Chinese energy healing practices that I find very enjoyable. I now regard the diagnosis of MS as a blessing in disguise. It brought me to a much more spiritual path and reminded me that my task is to be a healer, not just a physician, and most important, a healer to myself. I have endeavored to learn about botanical medicine, Ayurveda, Chinese medicine, and the role of spirituality in everything, an orientation I may not have come to without the diagnosis. It is very exciting to be part of the shifting attitude toward healthcare in this country, both personally and professionally. Chapter 11, Week 7. Project. Do some kind of service work this week, such as volunteering for a few hours at a hospital or charitable organization, or helping someone you know who is disabled or shut in. Any activity in which you give some of your time and energy to help others. Continue the steam baths or saunas twice this week if possible. Diet. Continue eating as before, at least 2 meals of fish and 2 of soy protein, generous servings of fruit, vegetables, whole grains, ginger, and garlic, and cooked greens twice this week. Supplements. Be sure that your daily multivitamin multimineral supplement provides CoQ10, the 5th component of my antioxidant formula. If not, add CoQ10 to your supplement regimen. 60 to 120 milligrams taken with a meal that contains fat. Exercise. Increase the aerobic walk to 40 minutes, 5 days of the week. Mental spiritual. Reach out to resume connection with someone from whom you are estranged. Make time for flowers, music, and art. Increase the relaxing breath to 8 cycles, twice a day. Optional. For a fast day this week, drink only fruit juice, water, and herbal tea. Take vitamin C, but skip the other supplements on this day. Commentary. Projects. Your new project this week sounds simple, but it touches on a profound subject that is very relevant to health. Your sense of self in relation to others. As a way of introducing this topic, let me recount the story of a patient who once consulted me. Richard H. was 46 years old when he came to my office. His manner was superficially engaging and pleasant, but I quickly sensed an underlying sadness and desperation about him. He had two chief complaints, chronic back pain and lack of energy. Both problems were of long duration, and I was at the end of a long list of practitioners he had visited over the years, none of whom had given him any solutions. Richard's back had bothered him on and off ever since he had injured it playing tennis almost 10 years before. Orthopedists told him his x-rays and scans showed no significant structural problems, and the drugs and injections they prescribed had not helped. Nor had acupuncture, chiropractic, soaks in therapy pools, or yoga, although he had put a lot of time and money into all of them. Richard described the pain as nagging, constant, and something I live with every day. He was convinced it had a physical basis that had eluded the doctors and therapists he had seen. His other symptom, lack of energy, had crept up on him without a clear beginning, but now it interfered with his daily living, making it hard for him to focus on his work as an accountant, to exercise, or to do much with his evenings, which he usually spent by himself at home, watching television, reading, or just crashing early because I can't do anything else. Richard had divorced 5 years before and had not found another long-term relationship. He had no children. When I asked him about friends in his life, he replied, "Yes, I have friends." But when I questioned him more closely, I found out that these were mostly college friends now living elsewhere, and they did not see one another often. Richard's medical history revealed a number of other symptoms, headaches, hay fever, unexplained episodes of itching, and occasional stomach upsets, though none of these seemed serious to me or indicative of any underlying physical disease. His body was in reasonably good shape, yet something was clearly wrong. He was not living in a state of balance. And although many doctors would have said his health was fine, I thought he was on a downward slide that could eventually result in disease. In my notes, I wrote, "Impression, disconnection syndrome," a diagnosis of my own invention, not recognized by most of my colleagues, one that lacks a numerical code that would make it official in the ICD, the International Classification of Diseases, the compendium of recognized disease conditions used by insurers and managed care facilities. I am convinced of its reality, however, and identify it with increasing frequency in patients in our culture. And I do see it as a precursor of illness on the physical level, one that can over time derange the functioning of the cardiovascular system, the immune system, the endocrine system, and physiology in general. In one way, Richard was lucky. Despite his having seen a number of practitioners, he had avoided the trap of becoming a professional patient whose life revolves around visits to doctors and trials of therapies. With his complaints and history, he was made to order for one of the fashionable diagnoses of today, chronic fatigue syndrome, or fibromyalgia, for example, and for being taken advantage of by both conventional and alternative doctors. The orthopedist might have pushed him toward surgery, or Richard might have become a regular visitor to a chronic pain clinic, or been sent to endless physical therapy, or put on long and costly rounds of electroacupuncture, intravenous vitamin infusions, magnet therapy, or countless other alternative treatments with little rationale to support them. All of this effort would have been directed to his physical body, but that was not where the cause of his discomfort lay. At least, not yet. Richard had gone to a marriage counselor during the year preceding his divorce and had done a few sessions of psychotherapy in the months following that event, but he was not very aware of his own feelings and not comfortable with discussing them. Although he was willing to consider the psychological dimension of his symptoms, like many people today, he thought that back pain meant a problem in his back, and fatigue meant something wrong with his immune system. I assured him that his immune system was probably fine and explained to him that back pain, One of the most common complaints that bring patients to doctors has a very poor correlation with structural abnormalities. It is possible to find patients whose X-rays and CT and MRI scans look so bad that radiologists cannot imagine that these people could stand on their feet, yet the patients are free of pain. It is possible to find other patients who are totally disabled by back pain and have perfectly normal-looking spines on X-rays and scans. What does this say about the nature of back pain? At the very least, it suggests that an abnormal physical finding should not, by itself, be used as justification for removal of a disc, laminectomy, or other drastic, invasive, and expensive procedure. "Then what do you think is wrong with me?" he asked. "I think you are disconnected," I replied. "You have no meaningful connections in your life, not to a mate, a lover, friends, your work, a hobby, a pet, or really anything beyond yourself and your symptoms. That is not healthy." Human beings are highly social, communal animals. We are meant to live in families, tribes, and communities, and when we lack those connections, we suffer. Yet many people pride themselves on their independence and habitually distance themselves from others. Some may indulge in isolation as a defensive strategy, possibly developed in reaction to painful emotional experiences in childhood. Others may never have learned how to connect meaningfully to anyone or anything beyond themselves. Of course, most people need experiences of solitude as well, some more than others. But if solitude is not balanced by connectedness, it is often productive of illness. First on the spiritual level, then the mental-emotional level, and finally materializing in the physical structure of the body. Those familiar with the philosophy of traditional Chinese medicine will recognize an analogy here. Chinese doctors say that all visible illness, illness of the body, of physical form, is preceded by invisible illness, that is, by illness of spirit, of the circulation of energy through the body. This is why I told Richard that he was not yet sick in the Western medical sense, but was likely to become so if he did not correct what was missing in his life. People who are married, have children, and seem quite involved with the world can nonetheless suffer from disconnection syndrome and its long-range detrimental effect on health. Disconnection is an inner experience. The suffering it brings can be all the more intense when it occurs in the midst of a life apparently full of other people. The essential inner experiential problem is self-absorption, failure to recognize other beings as meaningful and worthy of attention. I do not know for sure that our culture is worse in this regard than others, but my experiences in Japan and traditional societies in the Third World make me suspect that it is. Western industrialized society has substituted the nuclear family for the extended family, glorifies individualism and independence, and fosters a spirit of every man for himself in many of its endeavors. This creates a deep, unsatisfied longing in people that may be at the root of much of our social malaise. The prevalence of addiction to drugs that numb feelings, for example, the growth of gangs among our youth, and rising violence everywhere. I do know for sure that connectedness is necessary to well-being. You can eat as much salmon and broccoli as you can, take antioxidants for the rest of your life, breathe terrifically, and walk all over the earth, but if you are disconnected, you will not achieve optimum health. I gave Richard a number of suggestions for changing his life, including working with a therapist to get at the root cause of his isolation, getting a puppy to love and care for — he had not had a pet since he was a child — finding a hobby that would involve him with a group, and doing some service work. Service means helping others, giving of your time and energy to improve the welfare of others, without expectation of any return, whether of spiritual merit, admiration, or a sense of being virtuous. It is a practical demonstration of one's awareness that we are all connected, as well as a tool for developing that awareness. When the Dalai Lama accepted the Nobel Peace Prize in 1989, he said, "The realization that we are all basically the same human beings who seek happiness and try to avoid suffering is very helpful in developing a sense of brotherhood and sisterhood, a warm feeling of love and compassion for others. This, in turn, is essential if we are to survive in this ever-shrinking world we live in. For if we each selfishly pursue only what we believe to be our own interest without caring about the needs of others, we not only may end up harming others, but also ourselves." This fact has become very clear during the course of this century. We know that to wage a nuclear war today, for example, would be a form of suicide, or that to pollute the air or the oceans in order to achieve some short-term benefit would be to destroy the very basis for our survival. As individuals and nations are becoming increasingly interdependent, we have no other choice than to develop what I call a sense of universal responsibility. Responsibility does not only lie with the leaders of our countries, or with those who have been appointed or elected to do a particular job. It lies with each of us individually. Peace, for example, starts within each one of us. When we have inner peace, we can be at peace with those around us. When our community is in a state of peace, it can share that peace with neighboring communities and so on. When we feel love and kindness towards others, it not only makes others feel loved and cared for, but it helps us also to develop inner happiness and peace. And there are ways in which we can consciously work to develop feelings of love and kindness. For some of us, the most effective way to do so is through religious practice. For others, it may be non-religious practice. What is important is that we each make a sincere effort to take seriously our responsibility for each other. Service work is a common religious practice. Think of the various charitable orders in the Roman Catholic Church, for example. But as a non-religious practice, it can equally qualify as a sincere effort to take seriously our responsibility for each other. Human suffering is boundless. There is no way that any individual, through however many good deeds, will lessen it significantly in its totality. But by devoting some of your time and energy to helping other individuals, you can make a difference in how you feel as well as how they feel. And that difference may translate into increased inner happiness and peace, and therefore into improved health. As a happier, healthier, and more peaceful individual, you will naturally stimulate those qualities in people around you. Even if you consider yourself very well connected, have a loving family, never kick your dog, and frequently write checks to charities, you can benefit from the project I am asking you to undertake this week. I want you to think of some way you can be of service to at least one other person. You could give several hours of volunteer work to a community organization, for example, or help a disadvantaged person in some way, or teach someone a skill that you have, or entertain someone who is sick or shut in. The possibilities are myriad, and I will leave it to you to explore them. Remember, service work is a way of developing and demonstrating your sense of universal connectedness with other human beings. It is truly its own reward, and I have included it in the 8-week program because I consider it one more piece of the whole picture of health. Diet. Here are a few more recipes for you to try. Lentil soup. 1 pound green lentils, 1 Turkish bay leaf or 1/3 California bay leaf, 3 large carrots peeled and sliced, 2 stalks celery, sliced, 1 large onion, thinly sliced, 1 tablespoon olive oil, 2 cups crushed tomatoes or tomato puree, salt and vinegar, red wine or balsamic to taste. 8 tofu wieners, optional. 1. Pick over the lentils to remove any stones, dirt, and other foreign objects. Wash them well in cold water. Place in large pot with enough cold water to cover lentils by 6 inches and add the bay leaf. Bring to a boil, skim off foam, lower heat and boil gently, partially covered, until lentils are just tooth tender, about 45 to 60 minutes. 2. Add the carrots, celery, and onion. Cook partially covered until carrots are tender, about 20 to 30 minutes. 3. Add the olive oil and tomatoes. Simmer, partially covered, until lentils become very creamy and soft, at least 1 hour more. Stir occasionally, and add boiling water if necessary to prevent sticking. 4. Flavor with salt and vinegar to taste, and remove bay leaf before serving. Optional, add sliced tofu wieners during the last hour of cooking. Serves 8. Vegetarian chili. 1 pound anasazi beans, or pintos, 2 large onions, sliced, 2 tablespoons olive oil, 1 tablespoon mild red New Mexican chili powder, or to taste, 1 dried chipotle pepper, crumbled, 1 tablespoon dried whole oregano, 1 tablespoon ground cumin, 1/2 teaspoon allspice, 1 large can, 28 ounces crushed tomatoes, 5 cloves garlic, smashed, salt to taste. Garnishes. 1 chopped raw onion, 2 chopped tomatoes, 2 cups shredded lettuce, 1 dozen tortillas. 1. Pick over the beans to remove foreign objects, wash, and soak in water overnight. Drain. 2. Cover beans with fresh water to cover by 2 inches. Bring to a boil, lower heat, partially cover and cook until tender, about 2 hours, keeping water level constant by adding water as needed. 3. Meanwhile, sauté the onions in the olive oil over medium heat until golden. Add the chili powder, chipotle pepper, oregano, cumin, and allspice. Cook together for 2 minutes. 4. Add the tomatoes and simmer for 5 minutes. 5. Add this mixture to beans along with the garlic. Simmer the beans, partially covered, for another hour or so, being careful not to let them burn, until they become creamy and start to melt into the liquid. 6. Add salt to taste, and more chili if you want a hotter dish. Serve in bowls with garnishes, chopped raw onion, chopped tomatoes, shredded lettuce, warm tortillas. Serves 8. You can vary the chili by adding any of the following items along with the tomato and onion mixture. Fresh shiitake or other mushrooms, sautéed in olive oil until beginning to brown, or use reconstituted dried mushrooms. Sliced carrots or wheat meat, wheat gluten, available in dried form at natural food stores. Also experiment with dashes of balsamic vinegar. Barley salad. 3 cups vegetable stock, see pages 96 through 98, or water. 1 cup pearl barley, salt to taste. Dressing. 3 tablespoons olive oil, 3 tablespoons fresh lemon juice, 3 to 4 cloves garlic, smashed, salt to taste, 1/2 cup chopped fresh parsley, 1 bunch scallions, sliced thin, 1 bunch radishes, sliced, 1 cucumber, peeled, seeded, and diced, 1 red bell pepper, seeded and sliced, 1/2 cup chopped fresh mint. 1. Bring the vegetable stock or water to a boil. Add barley and salt if desired. Cover, reduce heat, and simmer until barley is tender and liquid is absorbed, about 45 minutes. 2. Mix the dressing and pour it over barley. 3. Allow barley to cool, then add the parsley, scallions, radishes, cucumber, bell pepper, and mint. If you do not have fresh mint, add 1/4 cup dried spearmint to the dressing. 4. Mix well and chill for several hours before serving. Serves 4 to 6. Asian coleslaw. 1 medium head green cabbage, 1 medium head red cabbage, 3 tablespoons sea salt, 3 large carrots. Dressing. 2/3 of a cup unseasoned rice vinegar, 1/4 cup light brown sugar, 1.5 tablespoons dark roasted sesame oil, minced scallions and toasted sesame seeds, optional. 1. Discard outer leaves of cabbages. Cut heads in quarters. Remove and discard cores. Slice cabbage thinly or shred in a food processor. Place it in a large bowl in batches and sprinkle the sea salt over it. Toss to distribute salt evenly and let cabbage sit for 1 hour to soften. 2. Meanwhile, peel the carrots and grate them into thin shreds. 3. Drain off any liquid produced by cabbage and wash cabbage well in cold water to remove excess salt. Taste the cabbage. If it is still too salty, wash again. 4. Add carrots and dressing, mix well, correct seasoning, and let chill for at least an hour before serving. Optional additions: minced scallions and toasted sesame seeds. Serve 6. Festive wild rice. 1 cup dried mushrooms, 1 cup wild rice, 1/2 cup freshly squeezed orange juice, 1/4 cup dry sherry, 1/2 cup sliced carrots, 2 tablespoons chopped fresh parsley, salt or natural soy sauce to taste, 1/3 cup finely chopped black walnuts, pecans, or filberts, optional. 1. Soak the dried mushrooms in water to cover until they are soft. Squeeze them out, reserving liquid, and slice. 2. Wash the wild rice well in cold water and place in pot with the mushroom-soaking liquid, minus any sediment, and enough additional cold water to total 2 cups. 3. Add the orange juice, sherry, and carrots. Bring to a boil, reduce heat, cover, and simmer for 30 minutes. 4. Add mushrooms and continue cooking until rice is tender and all the liquid is absorbed. 5. Add the chopped parsley and salt or natural soy sauce to taste. Optional. Stir in 1/3 cup finely chopped nuts, black walnuts, pecans, or filberts. Serve 6. Tofu with cilantro sauce. 1 pound cake firm tofu, 1 tablespoon salt. Sauce. 1 tablespoon canola oil, 1 tablespoon finely chopped fresh ginger root, 1/2 cup chopped fresh cilantro, 1 tablespoon natural soy sauce, 1 teaspoon light brown sugar. 1. Cut the tofu into 4 thick slices. Place slices in a pot containing 3 cups cold water and the salt. Soak for 30 minutes. Then slowly bring it almost to a boil and cook without boiling for 5 minutes. 2. While tofu is heating, prepare the sauce. Heat the canola oil in a skillet and add the ginger. Stir fry for 1 minute, then add the cilantro, soy sauce, and sugar. Cook for 1 minute over high heat. 3. Remove tofu from heat, drain, carefully transfer to a warm serving dish, and spoon sauce over it. Serves 4. Supplements. This week I want you to make sure you are taking CoQ10 along with the rest of the antioxidant formula. CoQ10, coenzyme Q, or ubiquinone, is made naturally in the body. In addition to acting as a potent antioxidant, it increases the use of oxygen at the cellular level, improving the function of heart muscle cells and boosting your capacity for aerobic exercise. It is much researched and widely used. I frequently recommend it to patients, including those with cancer, diabetes, gum disease, and Parkinson's disease, and I think its benefits outweigh any risks. The main problem with it is bioavailability, how much gets into the system and gets used. Newer soft gel and emulsified forms are absorbed much better but still must be taken with a fat-containing meal. I recommend 60 to 120 milligrams of one of the newer forms. Note that the widely prescribed statin drugs inhibit the body's own production of this compound. Anyone on a statin for management of high cholesterol should be taking supplemental CoQ10. Mental Spiritual. Your assignment here is not unrelated to the project assignment for this week. I am asking you to reach out and resume connection with someone from whom you are estranged. In other words, to practice forgiveness. Human relationships are complex, often marked by upheavals. The joy of intimate connection is often balanced by the pain of separation and estrangement. When people who have become close separate, there is usually a great deal of hurt and blame, since each party feels wronged and justified in maintaining distance. To take the first step toward reconciliation is difficult, requiring emotional maturity and skill. It can also put you more in contact with your higher self. To err is human, to forgive divine. If you can start the process of healing a damaged relationship this week, you will have my great respect. Regardless of the outcome, you will have demonstrated a willingness to repair a connection that was once important to you, and that willingness in itself is healthy. If you succeed, you will have regained a lost friend. If you do not succeed, you will still have improved your well-being, because forgiveness benefits oneself, not just another. By forgiving, you can lessen your own emotional pain and experience increased inner peace, no matter what the response of the other person. It is possible to practice forgiveness toward people who are unreachable or even deceased, because you still carry them in your memory and your heart and can enter into an inner dialogue with them. In his book, Healing into Life and Death, Stephen Levine gives a forgiveness meditation that can be used in this way. I am going to quote part of it as an example of how you can forgive someone inwardly, even if external communication is not possible. Begin by slowly bringing into your mind, into your heart, the image of someone for whom you have some resentment. Gently allow a picture, a feeling, a sense of them to gather there. Gently now invite them into your heart just for this moment. Notice whatever fear or anger may arise to limit or deny their entrance, and soften gently all about it. No force. Just an experiment in truth which invites this person in. And silently in your heart say to this person, I forgive you. Open to a sense of their presence and say, I forgive you for whatever pain you may have caused me in the past, intentionally or unintentionally, through your words, your thoughts, your actions. However you may have caused me pain in the past, I forgive you. Feel for even a moment the spaciousness of relating to that person with the possibility of forgiveness. Let go of those walls, those curtains of resentment, so that your heart may be free, so that your life may be lighter. I forgive you for whatever you may have done that caused me pain, intentionally or unintentionally, through your actions, through your words, even through your thoughts, through whatever you did, through whatever you didn't do. However the pain came to me through you, I forgive you. I forgive you. Of course, if you decide to try this meditation, you should do it with full attention and concentration and no distractions. Feel free to change the wording to suit your own style and needs, and notice how you feel afterward. The tasks that I have given you this week are somewhat different from those of the 6 previous weeks, and I expect that some readers will have difficulty with them. Doing service work and practicing forgiveness may not be as easy as taking vitamin C or trying a dish of kale, but they are central elements of this 8-week program. Healing relationships, emotional pain, and the sense of isolation that is at the root of much human disease is a necessary step in helping the healing system perform most efficiently. A program for optimum health that omitted this kind of work would be incomplete. Optional. If you would like to continue experimenting with dietary restriction, try limiting your intake one day this week to fruit juice, water, and herbal tea. Again, freshly made juice is best, if you can get it. Otherwise, use natural juice without added sugar. Some bottled fruit juice may give you very concentrated sweetness, and you may wish to dilute it with water. This will prepare you to try a water fast next week, if you are so inclined. A healing story. The power of intimacy. Peter R., a 40-year-old writer in New York, married with children, sent me this account. I'm going to tell you my story of sex, intimacy, and curing the common cold simply because it describes one of the most astounding things that have ever happened to me. I was an 18-year-old freshman in college, totally and completely in love with my girlfriend. It was an all-encompassing, full-force, mind, body, and soul kind of thing. My healing took place on a winter evening, a Friday night, when I was in the third or fourth day of what promised to be a miserable 9-day cold. 3 days getting sick, 3 being sick, 3 getting well. I had all the symptoms, sore throat, stuffed nose, fever, fatigue. I hadn't gone to classes that day and hadn't heard from my girlfriend, so I assumed that she'd made other plans for the evening. Obviously, I was too sick to go out or entertain her in any way. She showed up at about 6. I imagine that I pulled on a pair of jeans when I heard her knock on the door. I probably hadn't shaved, showered, or combed my hair for a few days and must have looked wretched, but couldn't have cared less. I must have been happy to see her. I always was. But I know I was astonished and touched when this young woman, who was no Florence Nightingale, gave me a big, fat, open-mouthed, romantic kiss on the mouth and proceeded to undress. I remember being so moved by her wanting to be intimate with me on that particular night. You see, I come from the school where you pretty much keep your germs to yourself, staying away from people when you're sick. And here was this girl, the love of my young life, who was willing to catch a cold, to ignore her own health in order to be with me, to make love with me, which is what we did until dawn. Then we slept. When I awoke, probably late the next morning, I swear that the sore throat, stuffy nose, fever, all of it was gone. Something about the intensity of the intimacy and sex burned the thing right out of me. No drugs, no nothing but touch, taste, sound, smell, and two hearts coming together as one. It was much, much more effective than take 2 pills and call me in the morning. Chapter 12, Week 8. Projects. Review the changes you have made in your lifestyle in the program so far, and think about how many of them you wish to make permanent. Develop a realistic plan that you can stick to over the next 8 weeks. Diet. Think about how you can continue the dietary changes of this program in coming weeks. Supplements. Start taking your tonic. Make a commitment to give it a 2-month trial to see what it does for your energy level, resistance, and outlook. Exercise. Reach your goal of a 45-minute walk 5 days of the week. Mental spiritual. Continue the breathing exercises. Start using the relaxing breath whenever you feel anxious or upset, and be sure to do it at least twice a day. Maintain your news fast for the whole week. At the end of the week, think about how much news you want to let back into your life in coming weeks. Think of people who have hurt you or made you angry. Try to bring yourself to understand their actions and forgive them. Can you express forgiveness to at least one of them? Reward yourself with especially beautiful flowers for completing this program. Why not also buy flowers for someone else? Optional. Try a one-day water fast this week. You can have herbal tea with lemon if you like, but nothing caloric. If this proves too difficult, drink some diluted fruit juice. Take vitamin C, but skip the other supplements this day. Commentary. Congratulations! You have almost made it to the end of the 8-week program. This week you will be fine-tuning the adjustments of previous weeks and getting ready to solidify a new, healthier lifestyle that will serve you for the rest of your life. I am sure you realize by now that this program is not an 8-week diet or crash fitness plan that you can abandon once you have achieved a limited goal, like looking good in a new bathing suit. Following all the instructions and then going back to your old ways of living is not the point. Continuing to move in the direction of optimum health is. Projects. I would like you to start thinking about week 9. Are you going to be able to stick with the many changes that I've asked you to make in your life so far? Are any unrealistic for you? Maybe by now you have decided that you really hate broccoli. The question this week is how you can carry this plan forward. If it is going to work for you, it has to suit you and be adaptable to the particular circumstances of your life. In the next section of the book, I present a number of customized plans for people with special needs, the young, the old, pregnant women, those with particular disease risks. I suggest that you look over all of this information to get a sense of how the program can be modified. Please understand that it is very flexible in its details. I want you to adhere to the spirit of the program, to its essence, and modify the details so that they work for you without being a burden or making you feel deprived or constrained. Improved health should bring with it a sense of greater freedom, joy, and lightness of being. Please review with me the projects of past weeks and consider how you can advance them into week 9 and beyond. In week 1, I asked you to become aware of unhealthy items in your stock of foods. I do not see much difficulty here. Once you understand the impact that certain fats, artificial sweeteners, and artificial colors have on your body's healing potential, you should find it easy to exclude them from your home. If you eat a lot of meat and dairy products, you will have to cut down on them because of their content of saturated fat. Remember that cheese is the major source of saturated fat in the Western diet. And start there. The recommendation throughout the 8-week program to cut down on animal foods is totally in line with current medical and scientific thinking about reducing the risks of diseases that kill and disable people prematurely in our society. When I wrote the first edition of this book, the American Cancer Society had just released new dietary guidelines that urge cutting consumption of high-fat foods, particularly those from animal sources. Use meat as a side dish, the society said, rather than as the focus of a meal. I do not think you will find it hard to learn to rely on good olive oil as your main oil in food preparation, but one difficulty you will face is avoiding products made with partially hydrogenated fats, since these are ubiquitous. You must get in the habit of reading labels and go to the trouble of finding alternative products, possibly in natural food stores. In week 2, I asked you to think about your drinking water and take the necessary steps to ensure its purity. That entailed some homework and perhaps some expenditure, but once you take the necessary action, there are no further demands. I do not want you to be paranoid about water you encounter when you are away from home. I do want you to reduce long-term exposure to waterborne toxins that can compromise your body's healing system. The main project of week three, learning about organic produce, required both homework and an ongoing commitment. You will certainly have to go to extra trouble and expense to obtain chemical-free fruits and vegetables, but you can make your task easier by learning the most contaminated crops and adjusting your purchases accordingly. See www.foodnews.org/reportcard.php. There is no value in worrying about the non-organic produce that you eat. Concentrate instead on trying to follow this recommendation to whatever extent you can, knowing that you will be helping your body reduce its toxic load. Remember to wash all fruits and vegetables. I also want to remind you that, however you can help increase the demand for fruits and vegetables grown without agrochemicals, you will be making the job easier for all of us in the future, because organic agriculture is following consumer demand. As it spreads, the quality and availability of organic produce will increase, and prices will come down. The other project in week three was to remove or distance yourself from sources of toxic energy. That meant some inconvenience, perhaps, but I do not think it is a difficult recommendation to follow. In much the same way, the projects of week four required one-time effort and expense, correcting impediments to good sleep, and improving air quality in your home with filters or houseplants. In week five, I asked you to experiment with sweat bathing in a sauna or steam room. Now that you are finishing the program, you can decide how often you want to continue this practice. If you like it, I recommend it as an ongoing addition to your lifestyle at whatever frequency is convenient. Perhaps you have located a facility you can use at a nearby health or fitness club or a friend's house. If you can see benefits for you, you might consider installing a sauna or steam room in your own home. When I moved to a new house some years ago, I had an old closet converted to a steam room that I use regularly, except in the Arizona summer. Relatively inexpensive steam units are available for installation into a bath enclosure. If you find all of this too much trouble and not enough to your liking, you can just take the occasional steam or sauna when you have overindulged in food or drink, been in contact with toxins, or feel that your healing system could use a boost. The week six project was to inform yourself about tonics and to locate a product that you could start using now. Begin to take your tonic regularly this week and keep doing so for 2 full months. At the end of that time, make an assessment of what it appears to be doing for you and decide whether you want to continue. Remember that the tonics I described are non-toxic and can be used over long periods of time. In fact, their benefits often appear gradually and accrue cumulatively only after long-term regular use. If your first choice does not produce results for you after 6 to 8 weeks, try another. Finally, last week I asked you to do some service work, to put the needs and interests of others ahead of your own in some way of your choosing. Of course, I did not intend this suggestion to expire at the end of the week. As I have explained, the practice of giving some of your time and energy to help others without any expectation of return will, in fact, bring you great returns in improved spiritual, mental, and eventually physical health, if it becomes an ongoing part of your life. I will leave it to you to figure out how you can implement this project and keep it going. Maybe you do something of the sort already and just need to recognize it for what it is. Maybe you have to develop it a bit. It's up to you. Diet. All dietary changes are hard, but I think the ones I have suggested here are not that wrenching and might actually show you new ways to experience pleasure in eating. Besides, you can enjoy knowing that you are giving your body nutrients it can use to protect and enhance its healing ability. Let me review these changes with you in order to identify any obstacles to your continuing with them after this week. The recommendations of week one, to add broccoli and salmon or sardines to your diet, should not be difficult. If you do not care for sardines and do not want to cook salmon at home. It is easy to get in most restaurants, for it is often a regular menu choice. Unfortunately, most restaurant salmon is now farmed. Atlantic salmon, not nearly as good for you as wild. Remember that medical researchers strongly recommend eating more fish in place of meat. Remember also that you can always use freshly ground flax seeds, hemp seeds, or walnuts as alternative sources of omega-3 fatty acids if you do not like fish. Increasing intake of omega-3s as part of your regular diet is a form of health insurance as you grow older, since these compounds aid the body in ways that reduce risks of many diseases. As for broccoli, if you do hate it by now, note that the general recommendation here is to eat more fresh fruits and vegetables. Broccoli is just a representative of that category of foods, and if you really do not like it, you have many other choices, including its cruciferous relatives, cabbage, kale, and cauliflower. I will acknowledge that the preparation of fresh vegetables takes some skill and time. For that reason, I have given you easy and delicious recipes that I hope will give you ideas for other dishes. The master broccoli recipe takes about 10 minutes from start to finish. Easily worth it in terms of the goodness of the result and its contribution to health. Cleaning and chopping vegetables can be relaxing, a kind of meditation that helps you let go of the worries of the day. If, for convenience, you must eat frozen vegetables, do so. They are certainly better than no vegetables. Or make a point of eating vegetables when you dine out. In week 2, I asked you to eat more whole grain products as well as to approach soybeans. The first recommendation should not be hard to continue, unless you are a real white flour junkie. Even so, you can add some whole grain dishes to your diet. As for soy foods, I hope that since week 3 you have found some that you will want to keep on eating, or that you have learned to like some of the tofu and tempeh recipes I provided. Soy foods make it possible to cut back further on meat and still enjoy the flavors and textures of animal foods. Since this will be a stretch for some of you, I can only encourage you to keep experimenting until you find soy products you like. Really, they are everywhere now, and if you will make them part of your diet, they will give you a wonderful nutritional nudge in the direction of better long-term health. Also in week 2, I asked you to give green tea a try, particularly if you use other forms of caffeine. Note that I am not telling you to give up coffee. You can read elsewhere what I have written about the effects of that beverage on health. I just want you to try something new and consider adding it as a tonic or using it to replace some of your other sources of caffeine. I can't imagine that you will have trouble keeping garlic in your life, even if it was not there to begin with. Its health benefits are so numerous and well documented, and its flavors so appealing in so many different kinds of food, that I cannot believe this suggestion from week 4 would present any difficulty, except to those who must get over unfounded fears of offending others by smelling of this wonderful herb. It should be just as easy for you to continue eating more ginger, which you started to do in week 5. Adding cooked greens to your diet, as I asked you to do in week 6, may be harder, both because these vegetables may be new to you and because it takes some effort to cook them. I hope you will rely on the recipes here, because I've developed them to show you the versatility of greens and their relative ease of preparation. I can turn a bunch of kale into a delicious main dish in about 15 minutes, and I have confidence that you can too. Greens are inexpensive and highly nutritious. Once you get to know them and see the possibilities for using them, I think it will be easier for you to eat them often. And that is the sum total of the dietary changes the program asked you to make. Not so burdensome, I think, that you should not be able to keep them going into week 9 and beyond. Supplements. All you have to do here is remember to take your antioxidant formula every day. That means having a daily routine for taking the 3 vitamins, selenium, and CoQ10, and making sure you do not run out of any of them. See appendix for suggested brands. You can and should take them for the rest of your life. The benefits in terms of reduced disease risks are too great to pass up. Exercise. Your challenge here will be time. Can you find the time for a brisk 45-minute walk most days of the week? Maybe you are lucky enough to be able to walk to work or walk partway to work. Maybe you will have to spend some time on a treadmill in a fitness club. I do not like that as much as real walking, but it serves some people well. Maybe you can do your walking in a mall while shopping. The point here is to use your body in ways that are sensible and non-traumatic. If you already have an exercise regimen that you are happy with, stick with it, and try also to do some walking. Remember that walking offers health benefits that other forms of exercise may not, and that it will continue to serve you as a best exercise into old age. Do it whenever you can, as much as you find comfortable and congruent with your lifestyle. Stretching should be easier for you, since it takes little time and feels so good. Whether or not you decide to practice yoga or some other formal system, remember the general principle. Whenever your body has been in one position for a time, give it a stretch in the opposite direction. Mental, spiritual. The prescriptions I gave you under this heading are the most distinctive elements of the 8-week program, and they are absolutely essential to it. Many experts who promote healthy living give lip service to the role of mental and spiritual factors in shaping total health, but few are able to provide concrete, practical advice about working with them. I have given you a number of exercises and assignments here that I hope you have found interesting and worthwhile enough that you want to incorporate them into your life on an ongoing basis. The breathing exercises are critical. Taking very little time and effort, they give immediate rewards and immeasurable long-term benefits, so please stick with them. If you enjoy observing your breath, experiment with extending the time that you devote to it, since this is a painless, gentle way of developing a meditation practice. I have come to believe that breath is the master key to optimum health, both because of its direct effects on physiology, especially of the nervous system, and because it is the ultimate link that joins body, mind, and spirit. No other component of the 8-week program has such potential to improve your well-being for such a small investment of time and effort. If my recommendations to enjoy flowers, parks, music, and art give you trouble, you are beyond my help. The more you allow these influences into your life, the happier and healthier you will be. This week I have asked you to try to exclude news from your life for 7 full days, a really serious news fast. Remember, I do not want you to be uninformed about the state of the world. I do want you to discover and make use of the fact that you have choice as to how much news you allow into your consciousness, especially if it disturbs your emotional and spiritual equilibrium. Beginning in week 9, you can decide how much of it to let back in. I also want you to bring the concept of healing more into your awareness from now on. Continue to note your own experiences of it, inquire about the experiences of others, read about healing, discuss it with family, friends, and colleagues, even perhaps with your doctor. The simple, and I think self-evident ideas that the body can heal itself if given a chance, that it wants to be healthy, and that the tremendous healing power of nature is always there to help, are missing from contemporary medical research, teaching, and practice. The more we can bring them back into intellectual discourse in our society, the sooner medical research, teaching, and practice will begin to embrace them again. That change would benefit all of us, because, as I have written over the years, the way we experience reality is influenced by the concepts we have or do not have in our heads. The more we focus on healing as an everyday event, the more it will happen for us. Finally, I have asked you to do some work in the area of human relations, to seek out and spend more time with people who raise your spirits, to try to heal damaged relationships, and to practice compassion and forgiveness by trying to understand the actions of others and forgiving them, either internally or externally. These are all general recommendations that do not require you to adhere to any particular regimen or schedule. Rather, they indicate a direction of importance in optimizing health, because the quality of our interactions with our fellow humans is powerfully influential on our own states of body, mind, and spirit. Obviously, this is ongoing work that should simply become part of the way you live. It requires nothing more than recognition of the importance of human relations and a willingness to try to improve your own. Optional. If you have followed the optional suggestions in recent weeks, try a true fast one day this week, nothing but water and herbal tea. Do not expect to have boundless energy or even enough to do your usual routines. You might do this on the weekend, when you can take it easy and keep yourself amused and comfortable despite not eating. Stay warm. Some people get cold when they do not stoke the metabolic furnace. And do not make it harder on yourself by keeping other people company while they eat. Pay attention to how you feel, and how the experience of eating is different when you break your fast the next morning. If these experiments have agreed with you, consider repeating them in the future. If you feel you are catching a cold, for example, or want to give your digestive system a rest following a period of overeating, or want to continue to explore the effects of dietary restriction and fasting on consciousness. Once again, it is a pleasure to congratulate you on completing this program. I know that it will continue to work for you in the coming weeks and years. In the following pages, I present a number of healing stories from people who followed the 8-week program. Note that they used common sense, were flexible, and modified the recommendations to suit their own particular needs.